Chris Jones, our man in the theater. I like to say put the
theater.
Okay. Chris Jones, of course, the chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune. He's been for years. He's here tonight to talk theater as he does regularly on this program. Good to see you, buddy.
Nice to see you.
We've been talking a lot about the coronavirus, COVID-19. I like to rename it.
Right.
The real name. Right. Coronavirus is out. That's last month. COVID-19 is this month. This is an issue
sounds
that we're...
Like it sounds like an Evanston punk band, doesn't it?
Right. COVID-19. The impact it has on the arts.
Yes.
And you know, obviously, there's been so much made about gathering in spaces and large spaces, yes. Large events. Is this a concern for the local theater community or the theater community in general that a virus like this could keep people away from the seats?
I think it's a massive concern right now. I think there's a few things about the theater that are sort of unique. One is that you have to go in person. You can't teleconference it in. You know, it's
yet.
Not theater at that point.
Right,
and so I think that's problem issue one. Issue two is that the majority of the audiences at Chicago area theaters are older. And I think older people are well advised at the moment to be careful before they go out. And I think that that is going to have an impact on a lot of nonprofit theaters, particularly those without huge subscription bases that are going to find it hard to keep attracting their older patrons, at least in the short term. And then the other thing about the theater business, and this is true of the for-profit business too, and any entertainment business, Second City, Teatro Zinzani downtown, any of these sort of entertainment venues in Chicago that are really dependent on tourism, is that we've lost an enormous number of visitors over the last few weeks. So that's business out of those shows. I mean, somewhere like Second City does colossal business from conventions. So now they have to fill that hole.
You don't even think about that when they say they're canceling the houseware show.
Yeah.
You don't think about all, you might think of restaurants, but you don't think about these shows.
Yeah, those guys all go out, you know, and they have group bookings and they go to a particular number of shows that, you know, there's this new drag bar I kind of like called Lips in...
it's right by McCormick Place. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's a lot of convention is and hen parties and that kind of thing. And I bet they're not having their best week right now. And the other thing, though, is if you look over to New York and you look at Broadway, I was just there last week and I found myself, you know, at Sardi's, like you do, Justin. And I was... I listened in on this conversation between a producer and a theater owner about what to do about refunds. So if you want to really upset a producer, you say one word, refund, and they
right.
they don't really want to refund
do it, right.
money. And in their defense, the moment that you, let's take a show on Broadway. Let's take, for example, The Minutes, which is a Steppenwolf show that's opening out next week on Broadway. I'm supposed to go and see it this week if they let me go. And if you look at that show, that cannot afford to have canceled shows, because what happens is that it simply runs out of money. All of these Broadway shows are basically little companies, little entities, and the moment that you starve them of any income and you give everyone their money back, there's simply no more money there's no cushion is what I'm trying to say.
That's razor thin.
It's razor thin. Now, obviously, your Disneys, they're going to be all right. The Hamilton guys, they're going to be all right. But I think for everybody else, it's going to be really difficult. And I think the other thing that's sort of strange about this, I keep thinking about the theaters in New York, especially the theaters after 9/11, and how amazing that was. They reopened 2 days after 9/11, which I thought was a remarkable feat. And how at that point to go to the theater was like an act of patriotism. People were saying, we're not going to be, it's New York, we're not going to be cowed, we're going to go to the theater. And I remember going on, you know, probably on WGN saying something like, hey, you should go back to the theaters, they need you. But right now, can you responsibly say that to, let's say, an older listener right now? Can you responsibly say that? And I don't know that you can,
right?
So I think a lot of us are just in a very difficult spot because you want to support those theaters and you want to say, you know, it's not as bad as you say. And by the way, if you stop going, they're really going to be in trouble. and especially the small businesses and the independent businesses. But on the other hand, there's clearly a risk factor now, and it's different from any previous situation.
We talked about tomorrow the president's going to go up in front of a press conference about an economic stimulus program or just an economic stimulus package. Mostly he mentioned hotels, maybe cruise ships, things of that nature. Do you ever see a city, state government, or federal government saying this had a huge impact on the arts as well and being able to throw a bailout towards Broadway or two theaters in that
way? Well, I think that's going to be needed, and I think it's something Governor Pritzker should be thinking about, because I think that you know, obviously, I'm guessing the arts are not top of President Trump's list of things to take care of at this moment, and probably shouldn't be. But nonetheless, it's a big sector in our city that employs tens of thousands of people, and the arts also drive business to restaurants. They drive business to the parking garages downtown, and I think that actually they are going to be hurting. And the other thing about the arts that's difficult for people is that the people in that industry are mostly members of the so-called gig economy.
Yeah.
So they don't get paid if they don't work. And that's another thing. It's not like they're working for a big company who can say, yeah, you stay home, you work from home. You can't work from home if you're an actor. It's impossible, right? You either do the show or you don't. And I think that it's very difficult to take care of those workers, and those workers are going to be really suffering. And whatever bailouts, you know, come out, I think some of the people in the so-called gig economy need to be made part of that package.
At what point does it flood over to a story in the newspaper or top story that that the arts are not being patronized? We're not there yet. But the idea that we're seeing every weekend that this becomes more and more hysteria, people aren't going to be going down to these places. Will there be? Should we expect a front cover thing that theaters at the dying last?
Well, I
dying
think you
gasp?
Know. I think if you look at Broadway, I think they will move in lockstep. So they've obviously, well, I know this to be true. They've gotten together and they've decided whatever we're going to do, we're all going to do it together. So at some point, possibly, the whole thing may just close down for a week or two or more. It's possible.
Ugh.
But and that would devastate New York. I mean, it would devastate the economy in New York. It would be, you know, catastrophic. And that's why they're reluctant to do it, because, you know, it's this two schools of thought, right? That there's so much unknown about this virus. And I think that the other part of it, of course, is that even if you cancel everything, there's still risk factors. Then you get, you know, you put people in their house, you put people in close contact with each other, you know, it creates tension. There's a downside to everything, including making people stay home, as they're finding in Italy.
I was going to say, couldn't the arts follow step with what we've seen sporting events do? Because right now in America, and take Italy out of the equation, China and those countries, it's been the prolonged events, conventions, 5-day,
yes,
6-day kind of conventions where everyone's holed up together that have been canceled. But the sporting events are arguing, well, it's a 2-hour commitment or 2.5-hour commitment.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, right now you're not touching anybody. We'll see. We'll give you some hand sanitizer. Go Bulls.
Like, right,
can
right.
it be the same for theater? I mean, it's only a 2-3-hour commitment.
Well,
I
think that's currently what the case they're arguing right now. Having said that, I was reading, you know, and I was reading The Guardian in London on the way in tonight, and or just before I left home, and I was, you know, in Italy, they're talking about how far apart you should be, and that, you know, those guidelines are a lot farther apart than you actually are in a theater.
No. Are we too close right now?
So
we're
about, I think where you and I are now is about right, but I'm, you know, the guy in the next seat is a lot closer to me than you are now. So I think that, you know, I think that's a tricky, you know, that's a tricky part of it too. It's just very, very difficult to know how it's all going to come down, but it doesn't, you know, even now you're seeing reduced, you know, some people are not going to go. And these businesses, as we just said, are on a razor thin margin, and it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, and there's something about it that's sort of depressing, in the sense that, you know, if you go back to wartime, people gathered together even in wartime. You know, I was a late kid, and my parents were very much alive. My parents grew up in Manchester in the UK, and they both told stories about, my dad would talk about going to a dance band while the bombs were raining outside, and his mother would be furious, but everybody still went, because it was, as I said, an act of defiance. But this one is a bit more difficult,
yeah,
you know, and it's a bit more difficult to figure it out. But, you know, I think that it's at some point we'll know one way or the other.
Chris Jones, chief theater critic over at the Chicago Tribune, with us tonight here on 720 WGN. We'll take a break and talk about some of the stuff that is happening in theater, as it still is very healthy, and including an announcement today about a pre-Broadway tryout that's coming to town. So we'll have that conversation continue it here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Chris, of course, chief theater critic over at the Chicago Tribune, is with us here on 720 WGN. And we were talking about the coronavirus, COVID-19, and its effect and its possible effect on the arts community and arts economy here in Chicago. Today was a big announcement. I mean, it's like to find out that there's pre-Broadway coming here. I mean,
yeah.
That's a good thing, right? I mean, that's a perfect headline to kind of push back on the others.
Yeah, so the news today was that we're going to get the Chicago is going to get first this big new musical version of the movie Some Like It Hot. That's the Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, 1959, I think it is, with Blue Chip Creative Team. It's the guys that did Hairspray, Mark Shaiman, Scott Whitman. It's directed by the guy Casey Nicolo did Book of Mormon.
Really. Who was on this program as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Buddy.
Great guy. The stars come in here. I know that. The stars come in here. And that's going to be in Chicago first. They haven't announced who's going to be in it, but it's going to be big stars.
Obviously,
so it's going to be good.
I was going to say, I mean, Chicago still holds court when it comes to cities that they want to do pre-Broadway
tryouts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the El Primo destination for that, and this is good. This is not till 21, so hopefully we'll all be still sitting, we'll all be still alive by then, that's very exciting news. And hey, we got a big new fleet of openings, so that's exciting.
I would think that Some Like It Hot was already a Broadway musical. I guess it wasn't.
There was a musical called Sugar that's sort of based on it. So a yes and no, but this is a brand new, thing. And it's really about the people doing it. You might be, another movie turned into a musical, but these are very good people. So this is going to be a fairly high.
Is there a trend right now when it comes to Broadway shows that, are you seeing more of the TV shows turned into Broadway musicals, the movies turned into Broadway musicals, going back to the old Broadway musicals? What's the trend right now on Broadway, or at least the pre-Broadway tryouts?
I think that most people, because Broadway is so expensive now, people don't want to drop their money for something they don't know what it is. So that most of the shows have to have some hook for people, like a movie they know or a star they know. But there's got to be something. Otherwise, it's just too difficult to get people to drop that kind of cash, unless you're Hamilton or something like that. But that's an exciting new thing for Chicago. And it's important to keep these big shows coming.
If you have this show and you have this blue chip artistic team that's coming in, do they bring the actors they know they want on Broadway with them to Chicago, or does that change before they get to?
They mostly do. They basically ship the show in and then they ship their way out again. It's very expensive. I mean, to do a show here like that, that's probably cost them $5 million, maybe even $10 million. It's a lot. So, and it's risky because tickets can be hard to sell because nobody knows what it is yet. So, and then they go through this sort of agony of like, do they let someone like me in straight away so they can actually sell some tickets and it might suck, or do they want me to keep me out, which is what they usually want to do, for at least a couple of weeks?
Because at the end of the day, it is a tryout.
It's
so
a tryout.
They don't want the local, because you go viral. I mean, whatever you write.
I am viral.
You are viral. Do you
Corona Jones, they call it.
Exactly. But is that the idea? I mean, they are trying to take risks and fix up.
Yeah, and I review those shows in that spirit. They're not finished, and we all know that. And the audience is here, my readers, and, your listeners, everyone here likes to see things first, and everybody understands it's not a complete process. So, it's kind of exciting.
Do they start, when they make these announcements, they have a big press conference, or what do they do? They just send a press release that they're...
You call Chris Jones. That's what you do.
What's the goal of doing it 2 years in advance? Are they selling tickets right now?
They're trying to get, it's a kind of a game of chess because they've got to get theaters. So, and then to get the theaters, you have to lock in the dates. And then to get the stars, you've got to lock in the theaters and the dates and the stars. So at that point, they know what they're doing. So they go ahead and announce it.
And then they
can sell groups and they can get, stuff going.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Chris Jones is here, chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. We're going to talk about some stuff that's on stage as well, and some stuff that's coming up in the spring, summer. Is summer, and I've asked this to you before, but you know, as we get closer to the summer months, I remember a time, and it doesn't seem that long ago, that summer's when everything went dark, or at least they went to secondary type stuff.
Yeah, you know, not anymore. It's busy now.
I was going to say, I get a chance on stage in the summertime. You know, like, but now it's busy. Now it's
It's busy. Yeah. It's very busy now. I think, you know, I tell you, I've never been more ready for some warmer weather. The best thing that can happen at the moment, like to solve this big problem we're all having, warmer weather. That's the one thing everybody agrees. Let's just bring on some warmer weather, you
right,
know?
Right.
Then we'll all be feeling better, I think.
That's right.
I'm just so ready for that.
We'll kill the virus the whole
time. Yeah, because it doesn't do well in warmer weather.
That's what we heard.
They don't like
warm. What do we know? I love that. We all become scientists. I'm always blown away at how it used to be a seasonal thing, but now we're seeing, is it because the audiences have come out in the summertime?
Yeah.
Is it because is that the idea?
Well, I think, there's just so much of it now that it sort of kicks into the summer months, and audiences like to go out. A lot of people prefer to go out in the summer. People have a bit more time. People are more relaxed. You know, what's more fabulous than a big summer show? It can be a really good time. Like, we've got Dear Evan Hansen coming back this summer, and that's playing all summer downtown. That will do great business, assuming everything's okay, it will do great business.
That's the name of the segment, assuming everything's okay. But what is the replacement for Hamilton? What are they going to do? Broadway?
No, I don't know.
I think
we'll be about 80 years old before they figure that out. I don't see one. There is none at the moment. But, you know, they keep trying, and it's probably just some kid who suddenly is going to come up with a great idea.
But for Chicago, they're going to. Did they get the pick of the litter at exactly like Broadway shows that are on tour to bring them in? Do they have a plan? Can you see their plan of how they're going to replace the revenue that was generated by Hamilton?
Well, I think Moulin Rouge is going to be here next year. That's going to do very well. I mean, or later this year, rather. That's going to do very well. That's a very good show, and that's good, that's a great title for Chicago. I think, you know, although I hated it, Beetlejuice will probably come here and probably do very well, and I'll, you know, complain every last inch of the way, but no one will listen. And, you know, and there's a couple of others. There's a lot of shows opening up this spring that, you know, we haven't seen yet, that we're just waiting to see what they're all like.
Yeah.
So,
when you hate something,
yes, rarely.
Is it really? Yeah. What I was going to say. I mean, when you're at the level of Broadway, I mean, everything on Broadway is professional, and it seems to be. I mean, the margins are pretty similar.
Yes.
I mean, is it just a little bit off? Is it way off? How do you hate something on Broadway?
It's usually way off. It's usually just a disastrous idea executed ineptly, you know, and it happens. You get a lot of really smart people sometimes, and what they come up with is really bad. And it's often everyone knows it, but it's like a train running down a hill and they don't know how to stop it. And then you got egos, and then everyone has a different opinion on what to do about it. And then before you know where you are, everything's gone to, you know, everything's gone to heck. But then you've got shows. I just saw the new Bob Dylan musical, Girl from the North Country in New York. Gosh, such a beautiful show. And all it really is, if anybody has, you know, wants to go to New York and see it, all it really is it's a lot of Dylan songs and an original story, and then set in the 1930s. But the Dylan songs are beautifully reorchestrated, and it's a reveler. If you're a Dylan fan, and you don't need necessarily Mr. Gravel Voice himself, you just want if you want to understand him as a poet, let me put it like that. If you think Dylan is one of the great American poets, which I certainly do, this show reveals that, yes, he deserved his Nobel Prize.
And what's the name of it?
Girl from the North Country.
Excellent
show.
Chris Jones here, chief theater critic. We'll take a break here. We'll come back and we'll talk about some of the stuff that's on stage now that if you're like, hey, I got to get out and help and support the theater, these are the shows to see.
All right.
Chris Jones coming up here, second half, 720 WGN. Some shows. Let's get into some shows. All right. So let's start with the Looking Glass Theater, the Jane Byrne show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So let's give you a little, if you're going outside and you're going to see some shows, then this is what you should
do.
Let's be bold, everybody.
I'm not telling you to do it, but let's be bold.
Yeah. So what can you see? Well, you can go to the Looking Glass Theater and see this Jane Byrne show, which is Her Honor Jane Byrne. What it's about is the time this really happened in Chicago, and if you've been around like me, this city forever, you'll remember this.
Right.
Though I wasn't quite here then, I must say, I'm not quite that old. But in 1981, Mayor Jane Byrne moved into Cabrini Green. temporarily for about 10 days, and she went back to her Gold Coast apartment. But she went
famous,
in the,
famous political stunt.
Yes, right. Famous stunt. Is that the word you use there, Justin? Mm-hmm. Stunt? Well, that's sort of the premise of the show, that it was a stunt, and it didn't really solve the problems of Cabrini Green.
So the play is about that. It's about that moment.
It is ostensibly about that moment. In reality, it's more about Cabrini Green and the struggles of the residents of Cabrini Green over the years, and the fact that, you know, it is interesting to me, and I well remember Cabrini Green. I've lived here, you know, since 1992, and I well remember Cabrini Green in its, you know, when it was all there. But it's, you know, there was a lot of people living there. There was, I think in the play they say 14,000, and I think in reality, the figure was more like 25,000. And it's really about the forces that put people there, and the fact that the police for a long period of time had a policy that, you know, it's interesting, in the play they use the word containment, which of course is a word you keep hearing with the coronavirus.
Right.
But what they were talking about was that the police policy was like keeping the crime within Cabrini Green. So they didn't really care about what went on within Cabrini Green. They just didn't want it to spill into the more affluent neighborhoods beyond. And that was fine if you were in the more affluent neighborhoods. If you were in Cabrini Green, that was really tough. There's a really poignant scene in the play where this young girl is just trying to get to a job, just trying to get to a job. And she's up for an interview, and the elevator doesn't work. Because, you know, the elevator's never worked at Cabrini Green. Yeah. And she gets stuck in the elevator and can't get to the job. Very, very poignant. And I think it's a really interesting show. I have my issues with it. And, you know, on the night I saw it, it wasn't really ready, I didn't think. You know, it's a brand new show. It's very ambitious. And not everybody knew what they were doing, frankly, at every moment of the show. But it's really interesting. And if you're a sucker for sort of Chicago history, in fact, WGN shows up in the show.
Oh, really?
Right? You know, there's a whole GN thing. So it's a lot of, you know, media of the time, how that was covered when you know, Byrne moved in. And there's things that you maybe don't know, like Jane Byrne moves into an apartment. They had to kick out like three families because her bodyguards had to go in the next apartments. But that was just what Chicago was. And then there's all the stuff with the aldermen and the mob, and the play gets into the whole idea that, you know, a lot of the crime, the drug deals that were going down in Cabrini were actually, you know, the mob was skimming, you know, 10% off the
Ben,
top.
Is Ben of Austin? It was Ben Austin, right? Ben, the author, he wrote a book about Cabrini Green not too long ago, and he came on the show and he spent an hour with us. And reading that book and talking to him, you learn a lot more about over the years, and that plays a prominent role, that stunt, the Jane Byrne stunt.
Yes.
That's interesting that the play is about that, only because when you see Jane Byrne's name, and I know nothing about the play, and I know that Jane Nicole Brooks is going to come on the program at some point.
Yeah.
She's great. But you don't necessarily think that it's just about that, like, because you almost think it's like a biopic. Like,
yeah,
the
it's
idea
really
is going to be all about Jane Byrne from which she started, how she won, how she lost, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's that great story about what was that, you know, she sort of, you know, swept into office because the previous mayor hadn't
did bad with the snow.
Did bad with the snow,
right.
And then she was swept out by Harold Washington. So that's a bit of a misnomer, frankly. It's not about that. It is about Cabrini Green and about...
It's still a great story.
It is a great story, and it's very, very good. And another really great story. So I've got two. That one's interesting, but not perfect.
Okay.
If you want one that's just a really good show for the smart-thinking WGN listener, let me offer that up.
Bold, smart-thinking.
Bold, smart-thinking.
WGN
unfeared,
listener.
Unfeared WG, if that's even a word, WGN listener. And that would be this show... What the Constitution Means to Me.
Right.
That's the name of it. It's by a woman called Heidi Schreck. It sounds dull. It's not. It's a huge good time. It's the story of this woman and sort of her relationship with the Constitution. And it starts out with this woman, Heidi Schreck, played by Maria Drizia, the actress from Orange is the New Black. And it starts out with her sort of talking about when she did debates as a teenager and sort of did American Legion debates, loving the Constitution. Then how, as a woman, she came to see the limitations of the Constitution. And it's really a conversation with the audience. And at the end of it, you get to debate, should you keep the U.S. Constitution or should we abolish the U.S. Constitution?
Wow.
And they have a teenage debater comes up. It's awesome. It's all about, it's a great show to take your kids or your grandkids. and get them juiced about the Constitution. And it's, you know, it's got something for all sides. It's a really, really awesome show. And it's at the Broadway Playhouse right behind the Water Tower.
Now, where does this play come from? Because this was a Broadway show?
This is a Broadway show last season.
Yeah.
Not, it's a different actress here, but the actress is excellent. And it is a fantastic show. It had, you know, 9,000 stars from me. I thought it was really, it's just a smart, intelligent, fun show. And it's the kind of thing that you got someone like me, you got to yak on about because people don't really know what, you know, it's not a movie. It's not a familiar title.
Is it the kind, I mean, obviously, you know, just listening to your review and obviously you love it, but is it the kind of show that you would want to bring your kid to?
Yeah.
To understand the Constitution better?
100%. Like if you got a kid who's interested in like, you know, model Congress or debating or any public speaking, becoming a lawyer, God help us all, or any of that, then this is a perfect show for that. It's really all about the empowerment of young people, which is nothing I enjoy more than that.
Right.
And it's, I just think it's an awesome show. But, you know, if, in case you haven't noticed, I kind of liked it. So, and it's, you know, it's a nice intimate theater. You don't need to spend the money on the big expensive tickets. You're fine anywhere in the Broadway Playhouse. It's not too, you know, no bad seat in the house, as the marketers say.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would not say that if it were not true. And it is true.
All right. So there you go. What the Constitution means
yeah.
to me. Also, the Steppenwolf Theater has I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter.
Yeah, so there's a fun show, speaking of kids. So that's a young adult novel set, written by a woman from Cicero originally, actually, of Mexican heritage. And it's about a teenage girl in Chicago, of Mexican descent. And the premise of it is that her sister has died and that she always felt, the heroine of the story always felt inferior to her sister, and the sister died. And then she sets out on this sort of quest to prove that the sister wasn't that perfect. And then along the way, she realizes that she loved her sister and she comes to understand her sister. And it's full of all these great local references. Like, you know, she goes to Mystic Books and like Wicker Park and like the La Luna Cafe. And it's like a Chicago story. It's aimed mostly at young adults, but if you've got like a teenage girl or a boy, anybody, it's a good time. It's a really fun show.
And it's
show.
Based off a novel. I
it's
mean,
based
this,
off
this
a
best very popular yeah. novel.
Very
right?
popular novel. Adapted for the stage by Mr. Isaac Gomez, and it's very, very good.
He's great. But is that usually work when you take a novel, a popular novel that people know and is a really like a bestseller and be able to translate it to stage?
Well, one of the issues is that's actually quite a long novel, and it I think one of the difficulties that Isaac does a good job of avoiding this problem, but one of the difficulties is you don't have as much time.
Yeah.
You know, it in order to do everything in a novel, it take you 4 hours of stage time, and this is about 90 minutes.
Do you see that? And you probably know this better than I, but because you think about novels are now just being adapted like crazy for every streaming service and every different place. Are novels usually adopted to play or adapted to plays? Does it go in that direction to have a novel turn into a
I would say that's
play?
I would say that's relatively rare, that it's more common to see a film adapted into a play, or, you know, in some cases, plays, of course, are just works of whole cloth imagination that later become novels.
Right.
So I think it is more rare in that way. But, you know, the streaming services are really having an impact on the theater, like so many writers now. And frankly, you know, the coronavirus, I worry, makes this trend, you know, it's like,
even
well,
more.
Well, I'm sort of going, okay, so now we're all going to stream everything. We're going to sit in our, you know, we're going to sit in our homes now and watch everything on Netflix.
Yeah.
And that saddens me, right? I mean, I think there's something for me anyway about going out with your fellow citizens.
Because you're seeing more playwrights who are traditionally found on stage finding work.
Absolutely.
In streaming world.
Well, there's an enormous, ravenous need for content. So playwrights, I would say in the last week, I've met with probably four different people who've told me they've got some deal with Amazon or HBO or Netflix, and they're generating content. And in some ways, it's great. And in some ways, it saps, you know, energy away from live interaction. And I think, but, you know, that is what it is.
You got to give them a place to make money.
Absolutely.
Because if you're a playwright, you're making
no
money. You're not making the money you're making by doing episode 3 of some streaming show.
No, and you know, and playwrights are great writers. And if you look at plays like, I mean, one of my favorite shows is Succession, for example.
Yeah, right.
I love Succession.
It's like a, that is like a, it's a play.
And it's
Shakespearean. Yeah.
You know, it's produced by Frank Rich, a former theater critic. It's written some of it by Lucy Preble, who is a playwright.
I digress, but the that is the Frank Rich from the theater.
That is the guy. No, he's gone.
I had no idea. When I saw his thing pop up on Succession, I'm like, there's a lot of Frank Riches in the world.
No, that's him. He's making the, he's making the big dough now. He's making the big
what
HBO.
What a transition!
Dough. Yeah, and but it brings, you know, it brings a lot of the, it brings a lot of that talent to bear on that. And I can always tell when you're watching one of those shows, like, you know, who's writing it and how good are they and all of that. And a lot of the best shows are written by playwrights.
Do play, do theater directors get the same kind of work in TV? Is it, is that a completely different style?
I would say it is mostly a different style. Some of them make that transition, and many of them really want to, but I think that's harder.
Yeah.
Whereas writers are just in such hot demand, and I think the writers in the theater, TV likes to suck up those writers as much as possible.
Right.
And I think that's happening, you know, that's happening a great deal. I was just thinking, though, you know, it's like the best theater is the most immersive theater. But of course, you know, in the current environment, the coronavirus business, it's like, well, you know, we're all standing away from everyone at the moment. And I just want us to get back to being able to fully commune with our fellow citizens.
Well, you and me are sitting way too close.
We
and that's just how
but
we
I
are
feel, you
so
know,
used to it.
It's going to be all right. I think it's going to be all right. And I, everything will get back to normal.
Right.
It's going to be a bit of a blip. It's going to be a little while. And we're all going to take some hits. And I think the arts are really going to take a hit. But, you know, because it's not like a sporting event. Like a sporting event, you can carry on and have the game without the fans.
Right.
Can't do that with a show.
No.
What's the point? No point, right? So, but I think in a few weeks, the sun will come out, Justin, and we'll all be all right.
It'd be a great idea for a song for a musical. I don't know. I'm just working it out in my head. Sun will come out next month. I'll figure it out. Chris Jones, chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune, joins us regularly here on 720 WGN. Great to have you, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, everybody.